Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, Women at Work columnist Leah Eichler and careers and skills you develop at university or college. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com, a career management social enterprise. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, and thanks for tuning in this morning. From a career perspective, what's relevant about a post-secondary education? Join us for a new feature, Career Buzz Conversations. This week's topic, employability skills and career ideas you develop in your post-secondary education. Call in or email with your comments and questions as co-host Melissa Rodway and I spark the conversation in the second part of today's show. But first, Leah Eichler is an award-winning editor and Globe and Mail columnist. Her weekly Women at Work column takes a fresh look at issues women face in the workplace. Leah's appeared as an expert on the issue on CNN. She offers new takes on ideas such as the mommy track and work-life balance. Ms. Eichler launched her journalism career in Jerusalem in 1997 before returning to Canada, where she spearheaded Reuters' entry into the digital age. She left Thomson Reuters in 2012 to pursue her dream of creating her own innovative digital media business called Femonomics. Leah Eichler joins me live in the studio. Welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'm looking forward to talking to you about the important issues you raise in your recent columns. But first, I want to get a bit of your career story. So first of all, what do you like about your career these days?
Oh, I love my career these days. You know, it's really dramatic to go from working in a corporate environment to actually launching your own company. And as much as people think or perhaps idealize being an entrepreneur, it's a ridiculous amount of work with very little pay. But the benefit of it is that you can really be a master of your destiny. And I think that means a lot to me, to actually control what I do and have a creative outlet where I actually own the end product. And that was a really big part of my decision.
So I want to get to that decision in a minute. We've had a lot of guests here talk about big career changes like yours. What are some of the skills or strengths that you feel you now draw on to be successful in this entrepreneurial venture?
Well, oh God, there's so many of them, and there's so many that I still need to master. But I think the most important part of it is to be really vigilant about my time. I've become my time is very precious. It really is my only commodity. And you really need to look at every day and examine where you're spending your time and imagine that someone is paying you for that time, and that time is costly. So I've become very time efficient. Time is a big one for me.
So time management, yeah. Time efficient. Well, thanks for spending some time here with us.
Oh, this is great.
Career Buzz. So what led you, first of all, into your career in journalism?
You know, I call myself an accidental journalist. I never intended to be a journalist. When I graduated from Western quite a while ago now, I decided to spend a few months in Jerusalem at a magazine doing an internship. And I fell in love with journalism. I fell in love with media. I was actually enrolled in a master's program in a completely different field that I never attended because this was really my true passion. I mean, granted, starting out in Jerusalem, it's an exotic place to work as a journalist. And it also is an exciting story. So perhaps that spurred my interest initially. But really, I love the media. I love being able to talk to a lot of really interesting people. And I love a great story.
Now, journalism is such an interesting career because there is a professional school, a journalism program in many Canadian universities, and that many journalists also get into it via other means. They take a degree in English or something else, and they move into it, or as you said, an accidental journalist. What did you study, and where along the line did the idea of journalism come to you?
That's really interesting, and I think I was fortunate in that I've been a journalist for 15 years now, and 15 years ago, there still was more of the school of thought that you're either a journalist or you're not a journalist.
Yes.
And I say that as someone who's taught a course at Ryerson's Journalism School, so I am a fan of of actually journalism education, but I do think there is an element of it that's it's either in your heart or it's not. And I really think it's a calling, like a lot of careers are callings, and you find yourself swept up in it and you can do it really well or you can't.
And back to the question, what did you study?
For all of those aspiring
journalists who might have that calling that you're talking about.
I studied English literature and politics.
All right, so there's hope for English literature and political majors that things can unfold in really interesting ways, right? So it's always the first step, the first break, you know, and you said you went to journalism and you got working on a magazine. You know, people always want to know that there's so many difficulties that younger people are having out of especially post-secondary institutions, colleges and universities, getting that first break. How did that first one come about for you?
Well, you know, the first break, I'm quite tenacious, and that's something that's really followed me throughout my career. I really don't take no for an answer, which can be very annoying to a lot of people, and I don't necessarily advocate that as the best approach to landing a job. But there was this magazine back then that I did love, and I was really dedicated into getting an internship at the magazine, and I was tenacious about going to work there, and even I would highly recommend international experience for anyone looking for a career. I think international experience has been key to my success, and I would do that all over again. Even looking back at my last 15 years, if I would change anything, it would be getting additional international experience. I think that's really key in landing a job.
Work experience or relevant work experience or even travel or volunteer experience?
Even travel and volunteer experience. I think it's so important to get out of your comfort zone and know a bit more about what's going on in the world from a firsthand experience. It makes you a more interesting person. You have better stories to tell in job interviews. There are so many good reasons to go, but I would just advocate going. So going back to your original question, I feel like I'm going again on the side, but going back to your original question, when I did travel to Jerusalem way back when, I was an intern, so I was asked to do the very basic stuff that interns did back then, which was pick up the faxes, and we had one email address for the office. I know it's so archaic, but I also really pushed to cover a story, and I was pushing for stories really hard, and I did land a feature story, which really did help spur my career later on, and it was a great prize that I could take with me when I came back to Toronto.
Awesome. A wow achievement. As we heard on Career Buzz last time I hosted, we had two kind of job search experts, and they were really talking about, you know, in your interviews, on your resume, your LinkedIn profile, and she called these things wow achievements, mm-hmm. you know, and how important it was to really focus on those and talk about them. So what was your wow achievement? What was the big story?
Wow. It was a wow achievement, and it's funny because it was so long ago, really, I have to say that, but I managed to interview a Palestinian collaborator. And again, this was 15 years ago. It was a dramatic story. It was so eye-opening for me. I probably took some chances that in retrospect were maybe a little risky. I was 22, so nothing seemed that risky to me back then.
You're invincible when you're 22.
In retrospect, maybe I didn't make all the smartest decisions, but I'm okay. And that story was so meaningful for me that it took me years to take it off my resume. I mean, years where I thought I didn't want to let go of it because I was personally so proud of it.
That's so interesting. We're talking to Leah Eichler here. She's the Women at Work columnist with the Globe and Mail. I am your host of Career Buzz, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM in the Greater Toronto area and worldwide on CIUT.FM. So, Leah, that sounds like a really spectacular start to your career. Something brought you back to Canada, and then you had this whole journalism career here. What was it that brought you back?
Well, I'm from Toronto, and I do love Toronto. My internship did come to an end, and as everyone knows, internships really pay nothing.
Did it pay nothing?
Well, it did pay. Back then, it was 500 shekels. I can't even tell you what that translated into Canadian dollars. That was 500 shekels a month. So I was really being subsidized to live there by family. And I ran out of money.
How many months was it?
Oh, I was there for about 8 months.
8 months? Yeah. Relatively unpaid.
Yeah, you know, that's expensive.
A big question for youth also, thinking about internships and how far does an internship go where you get experience and support before it becomes exploitation and the employer is just paying you nothing to do work?
Yeah, I am a big fan of paying people for work. Right now, running my own media company, I pay people for work. I'm not a fan of free labor, and I would not advise anyone to ever work for free. You need to be calculating about these experiences. The magazine also offered me a part-time job selling magazines in a hotel lobby, which I did get paid an hourly wage for. Granted, I did it before and after my job. I was working 12-hour days. It was pretty nuts, but it was worth it. Hmm.
Just, you know, for listeners thinking about that, on the one hand, you did the 8-month practically unpaid internship, and on the other hand, you're saying, I don't really advise it. We have had guests on the show. You know, we've had young people, too, talk about these situations where they get into 3-4 months of the internship, and they're kind of jostling with the employer, trying to figure out where does the job offer come. Mm-hmm. So is there possibly a middle ground here if the employer gives a lot of great experience and support or mentoring? Is it reasonable for an employer to ask for 2 to 3 months even of unpaid work if in exchange they've given that support?
Well, for the intern, I would just advise them to be very calculating. If the name or brand of a company is really that valuable, if it can be considered money in the bank, essentially for your next job, then I would evaluate it for a very short period of time. I pushed on because I, you know, found other part-time jobs that helped me get there along the way, and I really enjoyed the experience. But again, it's not something everyone can afford to do.
Yeah, yeah. All right, thanks for that advice. That's a good point. So something brought you back to Canada here, and partly it was the money, and you couldn't afford the internship anymore. So what happened here when you got back? How did your career unfold?
Well, that was also quite interesting. As I mentioned before, I'm pretty tenacious. When I came back to Toronto, I assumed it would be a very short-lived event. I love Toronto. My family is from Toronto. But I applied for a job. When I was still in Jerusalem, I applied for a job here working for Reuters. I wanted to be a war correspondent. That was my big dream. And they really had no patience for me, largely because I didn't have a master's in journalism, which for them was quite important. I had a lot of great, fabulous clippings, but they were skeptical. And I kept pressuring for the job. Finally, I think they called me up and said, you know, we're trying to figure out this whole internet thing. Why don't you come on board for 6 months and we'll see how it goes. So I jumped on that.
When you say pressuring, right? Because
yes. We
have listeners now, and some of them may be job searching. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, may be trying to advise their kids who are youth, you know, about job search. So pressuring is an interesting word. And
right.
You sound like you are tenacious and persistent, both words that you've used so far in our interview. What does pressure look like when you're talking to a big employer like Reuters at the
right.
time?
Right. You know, I actually... And perhaps this comes from being a journalist, I'm not afraid of no. And until I hear no, I keep gently, not harassing. I mean, I don't want to come across as someone who stalks potential employers, but I would socialize them and email them and call them and gently ask for advice and support and mentorship and try to suss out any potential opportunities in a delicate way, but very persistently. I never got a no, and
you don't get a no, it means keep trying.
If you don't get a no, in my mind, that means keep trying.
How many friendly and persistent emails and calls is it okay to do?
I probably that's a bit. I think it depends. You need to be very conscious of your audience, as always, and you really need to pick up on social cues. You don't want to burn bridges.
Yes.
You don't want to be that annoying person that they don't want to talk to when the next job does open. But I probably called a handful of times when I was still living in Jerusalem, and I came in a few times when I was in Toronto.
All right. We're getting close to 10, I think, by that calculation.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 to 10. We're talking to Leah Eichler here. She's telling us her career story. She now runs a digital media business called Femonomics and is the Women at Work columnist at the Globe and Mail. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz, CIUT 89.5 FM, worldwide at CIUT.FM. So, So it sounds like after your persistence paid off and something good happened and you didn't get the war correspondent job that you were shooting for, but isn't it funny how that sometimes happens and they have another need, you fill it. So what happened? The internet starts and they want to go online.
The internet started. They really weren't sure back then how to monetize. I think that's still a question that a lot of people struggle with,
yes,
is how to monetize content online. But I agreed to come on board and experiment publishing their content for a consumer audience online. And in the early days, I mean, really, these were the wild, wild west days of the internet. They needed guidelines. They needed to know what content structure worked. And there was a lot of things to figure out, and I was happy to figure it out for them.
You spent a number of years working, climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak, until recently when you stepped off of that corporate ladder and into some unknown, financially risky zone. So what happened there? What's the lead up to stepping away into something? You know, you presumably had a pretty good job, good pay, benefits, all the things that so many people want, and yet you stepped away. So what led to that?
You know, it's interesting. I did have a fabulous job. Before I left, I was running the digital newsroom for Thomson Reuters, and it was a 24/7 digital news operation covering all of North America and part of the UK. It was exhilarating, and I did love it. And I had that role as the editor in charge for 4 years almost. And what struck me at some point was I had a bigger calling, and a lot of it was wanting to have creative control. In a large corporate environment, creative control is not easily found. There's always a lot of stakeholders in any large corporation. There's many people that need approvals, and I really wanted to decide I really wanted to create something. I wanted to be the ultimate creator. And it was risky. I liken it to walking off a financial cliff, which is really what I did. But I haven't looked back.
So people may be listening and they are thinking themselves about walking off that financial cliff. They have financial obligations. They have kids in mm-hmm. school. They have all kinds of things. So what is the personal situation
right.
that supports this situation that you are able to step off of that ladder?
I made a lot of choices in the last year ahead of this decision. So I've been planning this for about a year, and my husband and we do have two children, did sit down and try to calculate where we could cut things. We were pretty harsh about what we cut. I mean, we tried to get rid of anything extraneous that we didn't need for the time being. We did put some money away, about a year's worth of money away to live off of very sparsely. And we don't live, obviously, yes, we still have a mortgage. We have one car, but we live very frugally right now.
So it's a family decision.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really key.
And the kids too, and the kids are aware of it. This mm-hmm. will. How old are your kids, Leah?
I have a son who's almost 9 and a daughter who's 21 months. So she's
wow.
not that involved in the decision-making process, but she is definitely a recipient of this.
21 months. So she was just in the process of being born while all of this stuff unfolded.
That's exactly the case.
Interesting. So, and your husband's situation, mm-hmm. right? I mean, sometimes people say, well, if the one partner has got a stable, steady thing going on, then it empowers the other one to take a little bit of a risk.
Right. Well, you know, in our situation, I was the corporate person. I was the corporate type, and he was the startup entrepreneur type, and he's launched a few companies, and he had that experience, and this was a dream of mine, and we always discussed that I wanted to pursue something more entrepreneurial as well, and we took that risk. So yes, we are both walking off that financial precipice right now.
How did your colleagues at Thomson Reuters and other people, how did they react to the, you know, managing director or editor walking away from all of that? Did people say, you're nuts? What are you talking about?
Right. Well, it was fortunate timing. There was a lot of restructuring going on at the time. So it was a good time for change anyway. The operation I used to run, again, this is the brave new world of digital media, was being pulled apart into various directions. So it was a good time to step away regardless. So there was not a lot of surprise there. I had been talking about it with colleagues for quite a while, and they knew that I wanted to do something really great with my life, and that this would be my next step. And in fact, I have a couple of former colleagues who are actually investors in my company.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
So what is the new idea? What is, in a nutshell, Femonomics and the thing that you've begun here? What is it?
Well, it's interesting. Part of my frustration when I was working in a large media organization was I'm a bit of a metrics junkie. I like to see who our readership is and what they read. And my first impetus was I felt we weren't targeting professional and business women with high-end content the way they should be targeted. And we were really missing an opportunity. And if you look at long-term trends of female university graduates and women coming out of business schools and the professional schools, and you compare that to readership of major business sections in media outlets across North America, there is a disconnect. I mean, that readership number is still largely male. It's still largely, I would say, an older age group, perhaps nearing retirement or 50s and up. And I thought, these are smart, intelligent women that need business content that is targeted towards them. And so I launched Femonomics. Now, the idea was not only to create digital content that's relevant for these women, but also to create a mobile tool for them to help them expand and grow their business. And that mobile tool called Rally, we've rebranded it for the tool, is coming out in beta this week.
And what is the business model? How will this, well, hopefully recover your income that you had before? How is that going to work?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, content is a hard thing to monetize. And I speak to a lot of journalism students who talk about content, and there's not really a whole lot of jobs out there. And they want to know how to monetize content. And I can't say I figured out the answer for the content part yet. I think content is a great branding tool. And it's a great tool to demonstrate expertise. And it's a great way to deliver traffic. So the content part really is a labor of love part. I can't say there's a huge revenue model attached to that. But for the mobile application, there is a strong revenue model attached to the mobile application, in that we'll be allowing participants or users in the tool to buy each other gifts for successful collaborations.
Hmm. So that's where it's going to come. There's going to be a sort of, we've seen these kind of deal sites and all of this stuff proliferate. So there's going to be an opportunity to buy products or services for one another.
I wouldn't call them deals. The way the app works is, and it's marketed largely to women, although we're not exclusive, you log in and you're encouraged to state your short-term business, personal, or career goal. And then a trusted community of women largely will pitch their support and offer their help. Once you've accepted that support and have successfully completed a goal, you can thank participants by sending them gifts. So it's the way a lot of women work right now. If you wake up in the morning and you have a task on your business to-do list, you email a bunch of friends, or you take people out for coffee, or you buy them a glass of wine and you ask them for support. I'm trying to speed up that process a little bit. And since these women are in different regions, they can buy each other gifts or send each other gifts digitally.
Fascinating. I was wondering how it worked, because I was on the site, femonomics.com is your site, yeah. And just looking around trying to figure out what is the story here,
yeah.
Prior to our interview today. We're talking to Leah Eichler. She's the Women at Work columnist at the Globe and Mail and also leads Femonomics. I'm your host on Career Buzz, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM and CIUT.FM. So, Leah, I want to move into some of the issues that you bring up. You have this interesting column in the Globe and Mail. Mm-hmm. It shows up on Saturdays in the business section, which I guess is largely read by men over 50, as you're telling us, which is odd because it's a Women at Work column. How did that column come about?
Well, actually, and I give the Globe and Mail a lot of credit. When I approached them with the idea, it's about a year and a half ago, they are quite astute, and they know about their demographics, and they can see where their demographics are moving to, and they see the value in bringing in more female readership to their business section, which was largely the impetus for the column, and I believe it's had a great impact for them. So I give them a lot of credit. I think it's very forward-thinking. Most other media outlets would have shove this in the lifestyle section, even though we tackle hard business stories. But really the key and my mandate for the column is to get female voices into the business section.
I've looked through a bunch of the columns, and listeners can check it out too, because they can go to the Globe and Mail site. Well, one of the columns that you recently wrote was, it said to women, what do you value, title, paycheck, or corporate culture? And there was this very funny picture accompanying with it with Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, if anybody's seen it. I have a daughter. She watched that movie about a million times. And, you know, it just brings up that idea. Do you go for the glamour and the title and all of that, even though it's a soul-destroying culture? Or do you pick the culture instead? So it was a pretty interesting topic. What led you to pick that topic in the first place?
Yeah, I'm fortunate in that I speak with lots and lots of women, both for my business and for the column. And I like to get a sense of what people are talking about. And that has come up a few times about corporate culture, the topic of corporate culture. And I don't remember what spurred that specific column, but I do think that it's an important thing to consider, especially now in a very tight job market. People are looking for the right job. And I think increasingly employers are looking for candidates that are the right fit, regardless of their experience.
The fit, though, might be a fit into a soul-destroying culture. You quote author Laura Henderson in the article. She wrote a book called How Women Lead. Mm-hmm. She said, corporate culture should trump title and pay. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, truthfully, once you're in an environment, you can turn a role into a lot of things. There's the role that you apply for, and there's the role as it evolves. And really, if you want to be with a company for not even a long haul, because I don't think people spend as much time in companies as they used to, but even a short period of time, to make an impact, you need to own that role. And you're not going to own the role if you're not fitting in the company. And they're not going to advance you if you're not doing a great job. So really, there's so much about fitting in properly and making yourself comfortable. And really, my best jobs were jobs where I wanted to jump to work in the morning. And I think you really need to have that feeling where you're rushing to work in the morning because you're really happy.
So what advice do you have for listeners who may be contemplating a move into a company? Let's say they have a choice and they think, well, I think I'd like to work for that company. It's prestigious, but, you know, I'm hearing bad things about it, versus this other company where, you know, it's not as prestigious. I might not even be making as much money, but I would be having a better experience.
I think a lot has to do with due diligence. I would highly recommend anyone who is applying for a role to do their due diligence. I've seen so many cases where people have left companies to join other ones that seem more prestigious and have turned around and have left within a short period of time. And that's not a great experience for you. You do burn bridges that way. It's not a fulfilling experience. Calling up a current employee or asking for a number of a current employee to discuss practically what life is like in that company is really a good decision.
And is that more important for women than men?
You know, I write a lot about the different experiences of men and women in the workplace, but frankly, I think when it comes to workplace fit, I don't think so. And I really don't think so anymore. Most men I talk to want to be happy at work as well. Most of them want to find that balance. They may not be family men, but they have other parts of their lives that are really important. And there's nothing wrong with valuing those other parts of your lives, even if it means running a triathlon or writing that novel. That's really who you are, and those aspects of your life are important.
Great advice. Thanks, Lea Eichler. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. We're going to have a couple of more minutes together to talk about issues here. We're going to take a quick station ID break, and we're going to be right back at Career Buzz.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com. Before continuing on with today's show, I want to let listeners know about the amazing archive of Career Buzz inspiring career stories. If you click the Career Buzz button at CareerCycles.com, you'll go to the archive there. There's literally over 100 interviews, including last show where we had job search experts Louise Kurzmark and Wendy Enelow, and they gave all kinds of great advice. There's a couple of things of note there talking about the use of keywords in your job search and interviews and resumes and LinkedIn profiles, and also Louise Kurzmark had a lot to say about the profile or that kind of summary section on your resume and how lame that can be and what to do to fix that. So do check out the most recent Career Buzz show with Louise and Wendy at CareerCycles.com, and you click the Career Buzz button. So I'm back here with Leah Eichler. She's the columnist, the work Women at Work columnist at the Globe and Mail, also leader of Feminomics. And we're talking about some issues that seem to affect women in the workplace. Another column, Leah, that you wrote was talking about corporate boards. And I found that kind of interesting and where the balance is between men and women on corporate boards in North America and Canada. And you floated this idea of quotas for women on corporate boards. So that's pretty interesting. I think you rightly point out that that's a bit of a contentious issue. But how would it make a difference? If there were more women on corporate boards in Canada, what would we see different?
Well, it's interesting. And yes, quotas are a highly contentious issue, especially in North America. What I'd like to point out in these columns, especially the ones on quotas, is, you know, the quota discussion is taking place globally. It's not just a local issue, but really happening across the world. And in Europe, there are a variety of countries that have already embraced quotas, and the impacts have been really interesting. So the example I use in that specific column is Norway. Norway actually kicked off the mandated quotas for a lot of countries. And the interesting thing is that, yes, within a very short period of time, the number of women on corporate boards in Norway went from, I think, 5 or 6% to 40%, which was the mandated
amount.
That
was the quota, right? Yeah.
Yes. And the interesting thing is, yes, of course, there is these companies did not fall apart. They did not bring on directors or corporate board members who were not qualified. They're actually functioning quite well. And the two other corollary impacts, which I think were really interesting, is firstly, the women on these boards were not a part, obviously, of the old boys club, but they also were not a part of the old girls club. They actually didn't have social links to other people on the board. And the one thing that most boards strive for, or should strive for, is independence of thought. So if you have different thinkers from different backgrounds, it creates a robust conversation. The other impact is one of the most common requirements of anyone applying for a corporate board role is to have previous experience. Now, of course, if there are only 5 or 6 percent of women, I think in Canada, it's depending on who you speak to, the numbers are about between 10% and 15% of corporate boards have women on them. That's private companies or publicly traded companies. Once you have this this group of women who then have prior board experience, then they can actually apply for other board roles. And in fact, Norway is exporting women to other countries because they now have board experience.
That's fascinating. All right. So it's that conundrum that youth would also face, you know, no experience, no job, no job, no experience. Same thing with women on boards.
It's exactly the same case. I mean, really, you need the experience to get the role. And that's really what it comes down to.
One final issue I want to bring up with you was the question of femininity and power.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because you quoted Marie-Hélène Budworth, who was actually a guest on Career Buzz.
Oh,
so we've had,
yes.
I've spoken to her when I saw her there. I thought, okay, we got to talk about that one. Women can be both feminine and powerful. And maybe this relates to the corporate board thing we were just talking about. What one of the things that fascinated me and the way you led off that particular article was about the way we use language differently, men and women, and that there's certain power in language and that women use language differently, even in texts.
Mm-hmm.
extra exclamation points and emoticons and all of these things. So what is it about the way women use language that's powerful?
Well, it's interesting, especially in the workplace, power for the longest time was viewed with a very masculine lens. And by that I meant it looked like control over other people. And for a lot of people, power still means exercising control over other people. The way I believe power is changing and that women can utilize power in a way that's very natural is a more of a socialized power to get people to come along to your way of thinking through a more socialized approach, which is also a very powerful way to influence people. And when you mention the language part of it, I also think being more friendly in your language, of course, you need to be professional in business sense, but there is that method of being friendly that actually does get people to, I have to say, like you. And when they like you, they do come around and see your way of thinking sometimes.
Uh-huh. There's probably some lessons to be learned by men of a CEO, a woman CEO, having to leave a business meeting. And she says that she needs to do that for a parent-teacher conference. Quote, 20 years ago, she would have feigned a heart attack to get out of that meeting, she joked. For a CEO to disclose that she had to leave for childcare issues showed confidence and authority.
Mm-hmm.
Confidence and authority. And is that the culture we had where you had to feign a heart attack to get out of a meeting so that you could pick up your kids? Is that okay now? And how does that relate to femininity and power?
You know, I still think it's a work in progress, and it really depends on your work environment. I think I used to work for a very progressive company, but I still never spoke about my children, and I never left. I never left to pick them up from school. I worked pretty much all the time, and I really try to separate my home life from my work life in a very serious way. I think that's changing. And I think to be able to confidently say that there are different parts of your life that you're okay with is takes a lot of self-confidence. Perhaps I was not as self-confident and I couldn't admit that there were other parts of my life, including my children, that needed tending to. But if you can, I think that's a very powerful choice.
Confidence is a kind of power. And when you have the confidence to speak the truth when it relates to your personal life, it's powerful because you're sending a strong message to everybody else. And if you're a leader, it creates culture in the workplace.
That's absolutely the case.
Fascinating stuff. I'd encourage listeners to go and read Leah's column. It's at the Globe and Mail. And when is it? Saturdays?
Saturdays, ROB.
Finally, let me just circle back to the personal last question, mm-hmm. Leah. From all of the twists and turns that you've gone through in your career and life, and especially this last one, what can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making good career and life choices?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. What have I learned? I have really learned to trust your instincts, and that is really easier said than done. I had an instinct to do this about 3 years ago, and I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited for the right opportunity, and I thought, one day there'll be a sign. Well, there's never a sign. You just need to take that step, because you can wake up one day and realize you're 10 years into the wrong career, and that's time you can never get back, really.
If people want to find out more about you or your new business, Leah, how do they do that?
Well, they can email me at, my email address is a little bit complicated right now, but they can go to my website. It's femonomics.com. And I'd love to answer their questions.
Great. Leah Eichler, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. We've been talking to Leah Eichler, and interesting issues there. I think that lots of stuff to talk about. And if you do have questions or comments on what you've heard or what you're going to hear, please let us know. The phone-in number is 946-7000. That's area code 416-946-7000. And we're going to shift gears. I want to welcome listeners to a new feature of Career Buzz. We're going to take a weekly topic and turn it into a conversation that you can join in. This week's topic is employability skills and career ideas that you develop in your post-secondary education, whenever that is or was. So again, you can call in or email with comments or questions as co-host Melissa Rodway and I spark the conversation. So Melissa, thanks for joining me on the air today.
Thanks, Mark. This is great. I'm looking forward to it.
So you're a lover of community radio. You've been our Career Buzz production technician for over a year. Plus, I know you've hosted a few interviews, so you've got some experience on this side of the studio window also.
I do, yeah. It's interesting because I was actually always interested in radio, and it just didn't fit into my life path ever. So it's been really great to have this opportunity to do it now, which just goes to show that you never know when you can fit things into your life, and you just go along, and if it's important to you, you'll make it happen. So it's been great.
So we've been talking a lot about the importance of career choices and the value of hearing inspiring stories like the story we heard from our first guest, Leah Eichler. So I'm pleased that you've agreed to join me on the air for this feature. The question is, what relevant career skills did you gain from your post-secondary education? Or what career ideas emerged from your studies? Because so many people just focus on the knowledge. They studied sociology or they studied English and they focus on that. So we're asking that question, and if listeners have comments or questions, what relevant career skills did you gain from your post-secondary education, or what career ideas emerged? And you can give us a call at 416-946-7000. So Melissa, you're back to university after a good amount of career and life experience yourself as a mature student. Let's talk about what university is like when you look at each course or each lecture through the lens of skills and career. And can you start us off? What's an example of how a course that you take at university can actually lead to career ideas?
Well, I will say that coming back pretty much 20 years later is very different. It's a very different experience to be back in school. And I think maybe the biggest thing that happened for me that I wasn't even expecting was that it completely changed my mental landscape. So it opened up a bit of career exploration. So every course, every lecture actually was teaching me about the world. So I was thinking about what's happening locally, what's happening nationally, what's happening internationally. And with everything I was learning, the good or the bad, I started seeing it as almost one big career opportunity. So for example, I'm taking a course about the anthropology of food. So in this class, we're basically learning about how food connects all of us and how everything that you eat has a story and has so many people attached to it. But then through all the readings and lectures, I'm learning and thinking about, okay, so now there's factories involved, there's farms involved, there's restaurants, there's health food, there's food inspection, there's all these things. And all of these things require someone to do it. So you need an accountant, you need a project manager, you need client services in all of these areas. And this was translating for me in everything I was taking. I took an urban studies class, which was fascinating. And at first you're just like, oh, this is interesting. And then you're starting to realize all of these gentrification projects that are going on, and then how cities are competing globally. So they're bringing in the Olympics, they're bringing in fabulous hotels, they're bringing in all these tourist attractions. This is like a huge amount of jobs. And for me, just every day I was like, okay, what direction am I going to go in today that I could possibly explore?
It's so interesting. You know, you're making the connection, you're connecting the dots as you listen to this, and you're saying all of these implications, career implications from what you learn. How much of that is actually in the classroom? How much is that coming out of your professor's mouth or in the conversation in the classroom versus leaving it entirely up to the student, and in this case, one who's got a better perspective than maybe a 19 or 20-year-old student who doesn't have that perspective? How much is coming from you? How much is coming from them?
Yes, to be honest, I think it's coming from me. I think because I have been out in the work world and I felt pretty closed in before I went back to school, and this has opened the door again for me. But I don't think if you've been out working, you may not be picking up on those clues. These are clues that I feel like they're dropping every day, and either are into exploring them or you're not quite there yet.
I like the way you put that, clues, because I think clues bombard us all the time.
Right.
And unfortunately, much of the news and the business news is bad news or bad clues. We have unemployment and this or that, factory closes. And if you just focus on that, you just have a bunch of negative clues that scare the pants off of you.
Absolutely.
And yet here are all these positive clues.
Absolutely.
That you're coming up with. And that, but it's back to you to figure that out. So let's talk about how one can pursue or explore the career implications of some of this, right? And I want to get listeners involved. If you do have a comment or question, you can email me and I'll read your comment or question on the air. It's Mark with a K at careercycles.com, or you can give us a call at 416-946-7000. 416-946-7000. The question is, what are the skills or career ideas that have emerged from your post-secondary education? So, Melissa, back to that question. How do we pick up the ball, follow the clue, you know, and do something intelligent with it?
I think the thing is that we often have this perception that all professors do is lecture, but they are out in the world doing amazing things. They're working. So we listen every day in school to one of my professors was talking about how he works with the city on projects, redesigning different parts of the city, or he is involved in urban planning. He's connected to a whole other network that we don't even realize they're connected to. Another professor is always traveling the world doing field work for anthropology, if that interests you. Another one is working for a government agency doing survey research. So they're talking to us all the time about what they're doing. I think it's up to us to, again, to be listening. And if it interests you, they're there to help you. I mean, these are people that want you to succeed. They're not competing with you. They want you to do well. So you have to sort of pick it up from there. And I think if they're saying something that appeals to you, you talk to them. And that's how you get connected, that they are a huge network of people that are working and meeting tons of people. So I don't know why people don't do that more often.
Massively underutilized
yes.
resource, right?
Absolutely.
But nobody tells you.
No.
Like, that's the thing that drives me nuts. You know, and I used to work in career centers in post-secondary education institutions, you know, and you'd always wonder about that. Like, you know, career centers are left to try and connect those dots for students, but there's no four-credit course. There's nothing that says you should learn how to explore the career implications of what you're learning. And professors don't seem to be that forthcoming either.
Yes,
about saying, why don't you come? I've got office hours on Monday at 3 o'clock. Why don't you come and talk to me about this stuff? But they're not saying that either, are they?
They are not. And that I was just going to follow up with that. I think there needs to be more of a link, because I don't even know if they realize they're putting out sort of these nuggets of information that if you are interested, there's a person to talk to. But yeah, they also aren't sort of saying, let's talk about this further. Let's explore careers in this field type for a half of a lecture. That's not happening. And there does need to be that connection for sure. I mean, it's becoming more and more competitive all the time. Nobody knows what they want to do or how they're going to do it. So we need to help. And I think we need to put these ideas out there that you can go to people to get more information.
Right on. So, you know, you can go and talk to your professors. What else can you do on your own? That's a question.
Yeah.
And I know in our practice at Career Cycles, we sometimes have people do a little career window shopping. And if they're trying to generate ideas, how can you do that? So talking to your professors is one thing. Some tools that are out there that I know people might be familiar with, but that become very useful once you have a few starting points. Most Canadian public institutions, high schools, universities, colleges have access to a tool called Career Cruising, mm-hmm. careercruising.com. And it's password protected, but it allows you to kind of explore career ideas. So that food idea, Melissa, that you gave us before, let's say you got interested in food inspection.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, gee, that just was a big deal with that plant situation in Alberta. Well, what is that? How do you get into that? You know, so if you have a starting point, you could use Career Cruising to put the starting point in. And what I like about Career Cruising and other sites that I'll share in a second is that you can then click a button that says related careers. And the related careers opens up 5 or 6 different ideas that you could then follow those links, like the clues, or, you know, it's kind of following the breadcrumbs.
Right.
Career Cruising is one. The Alberta government has a wonderful site. Go figure, they have more money than any other province to invest in career resources. And it's the ALIS site, A-L-I-S. And if you look up ALIS and then it's OCC Info, O-C-C Info, like Occupational Info, they've got a free site also, and they do the same thing, and it's not password protected. So again, we're talking about what relevant career skills and career ideas you got from your post-secondary education. Give us a call with your comment or question, 416-946-7000, or email mark at careercycles.com. So Melissa, what other ways can we think about this in terms of thinking about naming the skills that you actually get from a post-secondary education, not just the knowledge, but the skills?
I think there are so many skills, to be honest. When you think about, I mean, going to school is like having a job. So when I think about all the things that you're doing, you're researching, you're writing. Writing is actually becoming, I'm finding more and more of my professors are really focusing on writing, maybe because there's actually less focus on it with texting and everything else that's happening. They're really starting to say that we need to keep knowing how to communicate. So writing is becoming very big in my lectures, I've noticed. But apart from that, you're multitasking, you're reprioritizing constantly, presenting, group work. I mean, there's so much group work now in universities that I don't think existed for me 20 years ago. And people need to know that you can work well with a team, et cetera, et cetera. And within that becomes leadership skills and deadlines. I mean, when you're writing 4 papers in, you know, a short period of time, you have to hit those deadlines. So that leads into time management, conflict management. Again, there's so many things happening for a university student that are so relevant to the workforce. But I don't know that people know how to translate that into the working world, but they're doing it. So.
You just whipped out a whole bunch of skills, right? And I hope listeners were tuning in there. It's amazing how few of those skills that are employer relevant show up in people's job search or in their resumes even.
Right.
So just take take these sort of two related skills you mentioned, teamwork and leadership.
Right.
Right. So if listeners are thinking about that, right, and now you're pretty close to it because you're finishing a degree here at U of T, how does that work? How would you describe a situation that you've had in your studies that you could kind of say, let's say it was an interview in an employer situation and the question was, Melissa, tell us or give us an example of your teamwork skills.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I want to interview you right on the air, but what's an example so that listeners can kind of connect the dots between the thing that they're doing in school and an employer-relevant skill?
I think in work and in school, whenever you're thrown into a team situation, it's you either step up to the plate or you don't. So if you are that leader, that's your time to say, this is, you know, I'm going to make the first step. This is what we're going to do, or let's talk about it. Let's start brainstorming. But I think that those are really key skills for people in school and in the workforce. It's a great example because you're always going to work with people in either school or work that maybe are not going to be as proactive as you. So that is maybe your time to be a leader and to shine and to show that you have that in you, you know? I mean, you're going to run into it your whole entire life. There's doers and there's not doers. So who are you going to be?
We're talking about the career skills and ideas that you get in post-secondary education. So it's a new feature here on Career Buzz. And if you have ideas or future topics, please send me an email. It's mark@careercycles.com. And I can read your comment or question on the air. Or if you feel like being on the air with us, you can ask a comment or question by calling 416-946-7000. So picking up on those skills, Melissa, that you were just talking about, these are things that employers want, right? I mean, and they complain that they don't hear it enough or with enough clarity from university students. So we talked about teamwork and leadership. You mentioned a couple of others that I thought were relevant. Deadline or being deadline driven or getting stuff done by a certain date and conflict management. So there's a good one. We've got lots of conflict there. What's an example of either of those, but conflict management
conflict,
is a kind of interesting one.
It's a big one in university, to be honest. I mean, I had a situation this spring where I had to do a sort of a mini dramatical presentation in one of my English classes, which was fine. But my partner had zero interest in doing it. And we had to do it. He didn't want to practice. He didn't want to show up for anything. And that's a situation where, I mean, your marks are being jeopardized and you have to sort of figure out behavior management and how to approach this person and appeal to them and sort of get what you want out of it and have it be a peaceful situation. So
what did you do?
Oh, what did I do? To be honest, I pretty much told him what he was going to do and he did it.
So you took charge there.
Absolutely.
Did you ask what was going on? Like, you know, maybe he's got a personal issue and his mother is sick or something. Like,
it was his last class. He was done. He was going to Italy in 2 weeks and he was like, I'm over it. So I'll take the 50. And I said, well, I have a year and a half left. So, you know, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet. And in the end, I felt really great about what we did. And I got a lot of accolades. And he didn't feel so good, to be honest. When we walked out of the class last night, he was pretty sheepish. And you're in school for a reason as well, right? To feel like you've done something and to feel like you're accomplishing something, especially when you're older. I don't have time to be walking around feeling badly about myself. I have a lot of things to sort out and careers, et cetera, et cetera.
So did the guy come around? Like when you said...
He was very appreciative of what had happened.
And then the result of all of that, what happened as a result?
I got a great mark.
Yeah. So there you go. You know, a lot of people just need to be able to tell a compelling story if they're interviewing or trying to get this on their resume or anything. And I think that's the keys. You know, there's some people use this little acronym like CAR or STAR. I don't know if you've heard of that. CAR is like challenge, action, and result. What's the challenge? Well, the challenge was in this conflict management situation, I had this guy who wouldn't do his work and we needed to get a good mark. And the actions that I took were I talked to the guy, pulled him aside, kicked him in the butt, whatever. You know, in your case, it was a question of how to influence and persuade.
Yeah.
Right. And the result was we collaborated, we got it done, and I got a great mark.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that employers need to hear that. And even though you think that you have that skill and you say, I have conflict management skill because I had an issue in school, the employer does not get it until you can articulate it in some way that tells a little story. Mm-hmm. And this is the missing piece that I find when I'm talking to clients or when we talk amongst our associates, is that people have a very hard time turning that experience into a named skill and then telling a story to support it.
Right. I can see how that would happen, though. I think, again, being a mature student, I'm actually used to thinking in these terms, right? Like listing those skills is not difficult for me to see how that fits into my university career. But I don't think that's easy if you're 18 or 19 going to university. If you haven't worked, how do you know that you can do these things and that that's what's coming out?
Maybe
of
we
you?
Need one of these career management courses to be part of the curriculum, as is happening in a very small number of post-secondary institutions, to incorporate this kind of career management skill set right into the curriculum and not leaving it as an option.
Absolutely.
What do you think of that? Is that important?
I think that's a great idea. I think I could have used that a long time ago.
Let's influence the decision makers here. So we're going to have to wrap up this section. So it's a new section of Career Buzz, and I look forward to hearing your comments and thoughts on it. It's Career Buzz Conversations. And we'll do this. I want to hear from listeners and see if you think this is useful. So please do send us an email. What are your topics that you want to have a conversation about? Email me. It's mark@careercycles.com. And let us know. What did you think about this Career Buzz Conversations? Pick a topic. And Melissa, are you happy to come back and help us out with this?
Yeah, it's great. I love voicing my opinion.
Awesome. So we're going to have to wrap up the show here. It's Career Buzz that you've been listening to, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations, here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Other hosts of Career Buzz are Angela Fitzgerald, Leanne Sachs, Mark Swartz, and from time to time, Melissa Rodway.